my God.
Right.
Ugh. All right. Hey, clean it up.
Let's clean it up. It's clean. It's clean.
Yeah, are you sure?
I've cleaned it with the old clear water this time, not the clear milk.
Highland Springs. Mm-hmm. That's good stuff. That's great stuff. All right.
Better, yeah. It's better.
Yeah. All right, here we go. Oh. What?
I can't lie, I flam.
Did you? I'll line it up. Don't you worry about it.
Cool.
You know what? Truth be told, I don't actually use our clap at all. When the clap happens, that's actually a sample of one of our old claps where we just nailed it.
Really?
Yeah, with a ton of reverb on it. Yeah. Peek. I've been lying to everybody this whole time.
Peek behind the curtain, mate. I love it. I love it.
And even the counting, because I don't know what tempo our intro is in. Like, people probably don't know, but we don't hear the intro.
Yep.
So I have to then space the counting out so that it's in the tempo of the intro.
Wow. You would never know.
Well, that's why we need patrons to pay for this podcast, because my editing skills are taxed to the limit, dude. Spending all day trying to get that clap dialed in. How are you, man? True.
Yeah, mate, I'm good, man. Yeah, I'm very good. I've been... what have I been up to, mate? Yeah, a lot of shoe releases, but mainly a lot of drum stuff. I was teaching yesterday, so I teach every Sunday now, which was wicked. Practicing. Thanks. Shout out the practice project.
Oh my goodness.
Ooh.
Yep. Oh. I wonder, like, if we might be gaining a lot of patrons because of the practice project, but we also might be losing a lot of respect because people are seeing the reality of us practicing and it's not pretty.
It's not pretty. The camera angles are not pretty. The lighting is not pretty. I mean, when I turn that camera around, I'm like, whoa, now the old Sigma 20 mil lens does a lot of magic. The iPhone.
So a 20 mil lens shaves off quite a bit.
Yes.
And then, so you try to recreate it by going wide on the iPhone. But if you're not dead center where the pin cushioning is happening, you're in trouble. Mm-hmm. You're gaining 95 pounds on the edge of that frame. So you got to be very, very careful.
What have you been up to, mate?
Was like
12 million practices with Simon Says.
Yeah. lots of Simon Says practices, lots of missing skin on the fingers. What else? Jazz courses got released, so that's good. That's been a lot of fun, and really just trying to, like, if you saw lesson one, there's no lesson. It's just 5 minutes of me telling the camera, I'm not a jazz drummer. Please don't, this is not jazz. This is jazz independence. I've done this for my whole life. I love jazz independence, but please, please, please do not go to your local jazz professional piano player and be like, I did Mike's course. I'm ready to go.
Yeah.
Put me in, coach.
Yeah.
It's like, whoa. Jazz is a whole different thing. I'm teaching you jazz independence so then you can go learn jazz music. But that's been a lot of fun. And just getting to record that 18-inch bop kit, that 70s Gretsch stop sign badge kit. That's a totally different mix. I had to set up a whole new Pro Tools session. I'm not using a lot of Slate samples on that kick.
Yeah. I bet. It's kind of just coming in dry.
Yeah, just going to dry. No, but that's been good. The Simon Says stuff's been rad. Finally got, I put up a post yesterday about the cymbals that I'm using. I finally got like my cymbals dialed in with them for that band. So that's been good.
Sick.
What else? Yeah, and then just working on camp curriculum because I've got two drum camps. I've got 10 drum camps coming up, but I have two different curriculums, the advanced and the intermediate. So working on that and working on the curriculum for our virtual drum camp that is happening this Saturday.
Boom. Yep. I need to, I've got the thing with Rudiments. I've got a million things I want to talk about and a million things I want to show and demonstrate and teach. It's just picking the right thing because there's many things you can talk about within Rudiments. But yeah, I'm going to go through that this week. I think tomorrow is going to be the day where I sit here and figure out what I'm going to go through and why and all those kind of things.
Quick question for you.
Go on, mate.
Okay, so you have this virtual camp coming up. You know that you're going to be watched by drummers. It's a me and you thing. You know that you've got your thing. Like, I've got my go-to Rudiments. I know I can, let's go. Do you put any pressure on yourself to be like, I'm going to push myself as an educator to teach something I don't normally teach or I've never taught before? Or do you just go, look, man, Just a nice layup. You don't have to shoot a three-pointer. Just a nice layup.
I have learned to... I don't mind like a new approach on something. Like trying to explain it in a new way that I haven't done before. or a new concept, but I've learned the hard way from teaching something I cannot play. Do you know what I mean? I mean, the kick left right situation is still a thing.
That's still there.
It's still there.
Do you know what I mean? Good.
And also, like we say many times in this podcast, when you're demonstrating something, you never want to be that guy that says, you know, you just get it. Anyway, moving on.
You know what I mean.
It would have sounded like something like that. Anyway, but I actually discover a few. I like that sort of improvising when describing something, because it's kind of like a podcast. You're in the hot seat and you're kind of thinking of different ways to, you're reverse engineering your thought process. And sometimes you can stumble across something really, really cool. So I quite like that. But it's still flipping scary, mate. It feels like we're going to do a clinic or something, you know?
It is a clinic. And it's, you know, what's, I think, more difficult about it than a clinic is that there's no feedback. It's just you in a room by yourself. You know that there's, for this camp, we have 20 spots. And if you want a spot, just the link is in the description of this podcast, and that'll take you to the Eventbrite page. You can sign up before Saturday. But you know they're watching, but you are in a room by yourself and there's no feedback. And that's the one thing that's tough. You know, if you have a clinic, you might have a little laughter that buffers your two sentences. It holds over, you know, or maybe somebody does have a question. They raise their hand and it's like, cool, you've triggered the next 10 minutes of my clinic with that question. Not in the online world. It's just you and a camera.
Yeah. You get the occasional, sounds great, Eddie. And you're like, thanks, mate.
Okay. I does it? What are you listening to on your phone while driving? Like, I don't know. Like,
I mean,
I hope that everybody is David Hodrick, like sitting in a studio room with two NS10s. And then when David says, sounds great, I'm like, I believe you. Cause I know you're sitting there with like power amps and everything. Teaching that way. Well, let's just jump right into our main topic.
Yeah, let's go for it.
So teaching to a camera is one thing. And I think one of the things that most people probably don't realize is the anxiety, especially let's throw in the live streaming, the anxiety of not knowing whether all the tech is working. That is a massive component that if you notice somebody is a little tentative on camera, it could be because they're actually thinking, is this thing on? Like, is it recording? Did the battery die? Is the memory card full? There's no like, you know, we don't have directors. Nobody holds their hand up and says, sorry, Mike, can we take that from the top? Memory card filled up.
Yeah.
You just finished this thing that meant the world to you and you poured your soul out to the camera. And then you come to the camera afterwards and you're like, okay, sweet. Stopped 1 minute in. That's awesome. And literally, I don't know about for you, but it takes the wind out of my sails so hard that I'm like, I have to go take a nap. I can't deal with this now.
I turn into a baby. I have the biggest drop ever. I'm like, yeah, I mean, I could just burn the drum kit right now, to be honest. Also, the camera, I've got the receipt. I can take it back. Didn't want to make it anyway. It's like
you're in the middle of a field, torch the whole thing, get some insurance.
Mate, exactly. Yeah, it's true. And then also, like, if you had someone there, like a team of people, and they were like, right, all good to go. You'd be like, oh, can you guys just leave the room? You're kind of putting me off.
I was going to talk to you about that. One thing that probably people would not guess, because I spend, I would say, 90% of my career on camera, is I am so, so bad at being on camera when someone else is directing the thing. Anytime I've been interviewed, when I did the Adobe thing, like they did like a customer spotlight on me, like the interview footage of me is so terrible. I don't know why I can't be on camera. The Groove Bell commercial, there's a whole crew of people and they're like, all right, go ahead and look down the barrel of the lens. And or the worst for me is when I have to look off lens and talk.
Yeah.
Like I'm being interviewed, but there's nobody over there. I'm so bad at being on camera unless everyone leaves. Are you the same?
Exactly the same. I actually didn't realize this until we started shooting content for like the Paragon stuff, the shoe thing I do on the side, because Luke was in the room, my business partner. And I was like, why is this weird? Like I had this pressure that I never felt before. And it was like, if I made a mistake, I would feel bad for going again. Or let's say I nailed it, but I wanted to do it again because I thought I could do it better. I felt guilty, like I was wasting his time. But when you're on your own, you can go and you can sort of try and perfect things and whatnot. But yeah, I'm exactly the same, mate. On my own, I'm sweet. Put someone else in the room, I'm like, yeah, I don't want to be the guy on camera anymore. I don't know what it is. Let's be an anonymous company.
I'll film you. Let me just film you, buddy. that's why I stopped working with the guy that I was working with. It wasn't anything that he was doing wrong. He was crushing it. I just couldn't be myself with him holding the camera. And I was like, man, this is so weird. So yeah, speaking to a camera can be a very odd thing. It gets even more weird. I mean, if you think about all the people that have massive YouTube careers out of their bedroom, you can't just assume that they could be actors or actresses.
Yeah.
It's like, no, that's a whole unique skill set, which is speaking to a camera all by yourself. All right. So let's get into in-person teaching versus on camera or online teaching. So as far as a one-to-one drum lesson, what is your thought process going into it? Are you thinking about the student? Are you thinking about time? What's going on?
I'm thinking about everything. Yeah. I'm thinking about are they going to be late? What was the last lesson like? Like, where can we develop this? What mood are they going to be in? What if they're tired? Like, I'm thinking about every single emotion that you could ever think of. And that's why I kind of worked myself up. Like I said it on a recent episode when I'm driving up to the studio to teach. I'm like slapping myself in the face going, come on, Eddie, you got this. You can give them the best lesson they've ever had. And one of the guys came in, he was like, you know, hope you didn't slap your face too much on the way up here. And I was like, oh, you listen.
Oh, he heard the podcast.
podcast. He was like, don't worry, man. Like, it's all good. Like, you nail it. It's fine. And I'm like, yeah, it's just, do you teach? And he was like, yeah. And I was like, right, you get it though. But yeah, it's this pressure of, well, it's the emotions that I'm thinking and feeling are things that are out of my control. And I guess that's one of the big differences when you're speaking to a camera versus you're speaking to a real human being in real time. There's things that are out of your control that dictate where you're going to go with that specific subject or content or whatever it may be, that lesson. Whereas when a camera's turned on, you're going into it with, this is what I'm going to talk about and this is what is going to happen, regardless of anything or anyone, because it's just you. You know, so
I'm
thinking about a million different things when it comes to a one-to-one in-person lesson. What do you think about when you know you've got a one-to-one?
Yeah. So, I've been teaching one guy for probably over a year now, cause it was before last camp season, that I teach every week. And then Amber will just kind of fill a random slot here or there. So it depends. If it's a one-off where I've never met the person, they're coming from out of town just for a one-hour lesson and that's it, then really, honestly, I'm thinking about make sure there's tea ready, make sure you have water, make sure the candles have been going for at least an hour. Like, I'm thinking about giving them an experience.
Yeah.
But since I don't know them, I can't really prepare. But I would say I'm full of nerves. Like, I just like you, I just want to make it the best experience possible. If somebody pays just for round numbers, let's say it's $100 for a lesson, I just want to make sure that they're like, man, I would have paid $500 for that when it's over. Mm-hmm. I want to over deliver. When it's somebody that I've been teaching regularly, that's a totally different thing. Once again, I'm not nervous, but I'm full of nerves because I want it to be good. I want to make sure they go home excited. I think I'm really somewhat precious about the idea of, I don't even know how to explain this properly, but I have the ability as their teacher to ruin this whole instrument for them by doing the wrong thing.
Yeah.
And I'm really precious and very cautious of that because I honestly don't know how I stuck with the drums with the early teachers I had. Like, these were guys that didn't care about the craft at all. They wanted to be out gigging, but they couldn't for some reason. So they were just, you know, like, all right, I'll teach at the local music store. And I'm just so happy I stuck with it. But I could have just been like, yeah, this is no fun. I'll do karate instead. I'll do soccer. I'll do BMX racing, whatever. So anyways, I really want to make sure that, okay, I do have to teach this person. So I have to be honest. And some of this stuff isn't going to be easy, but I also need to make sure they have a couple wins. Yeah. I got to give them, you know, it's almost like going to the driving range as a non-golfer. You just need to have a couple times that you hit the ball far and straight and you go, oh, this is so cool. And then the 600 shanks get out of your head right away because of that one or two like pure shots.
Yeah.
And then you realize like, oh, so that's what a pro golfer feels like all the time. And I want these students to have that on the drum set. A couple wins where they go like, so is that what it's like the whole time? And it's like, well, for some people, not for me, no. But yeah, for some people, it's like that all the time. They're just happy and everything works out. And so it's like, I want to make sure they have a couple wins. So that's what's going on. But the big difference, and I talked to you about this on the voice notes, the biggest difference that I find between one-to-one lessons and on-camera teaching is in the one-to-one lesson, my nerves and my imposter syndrome and all that stuff, that happens before the lesson. Then as soon as I shake the person's hand and we sit down, it all goes away and we're on this adventure, this group or two-person adventure of like, let's see where this whole thing takes us. And I never think about it again. The only thing that happens is we run out of time.
Yeah.
But I'm never thinking, is he enjoying this? Like, we are on this journey and I love that stuff so much. With the camera stuff, I feel that way before I press record. I'm like, this is going to be amazing. I'm going to change people's lives. It's going to have the best lighting ever. The bokeh is going to be gorgeous. I'm going to put this little light bulb behind me so it'll be out of focus and cool. And then the candle will flicker. And then I press record and all I'm thinking is like, did I even set the white balance? And the whole time I'm filming, I'm in my head. And then all of a sudden I'm saying like, who cares? It's just another drum fill. No one wants to learn this stuff. And the bad wolf takes over through the process where the bad wolf is only present at the beginning of a private lesson, but then is immediately squashed by the moment. And so those are two things like that I'm trying to, I want my filming of lessons to not have as much, I don't know, crap talking in my head while it's happening.
Yeah. I mean, I guess that's happening because you care about what you do. You care about how it 100%. Looks, you care about how it sounds, and then you care most importantly about what you're teaching and how you're teaching it and what the person is going to get from watching that video. And that's a lot to take in and a lot to do in real time. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, we just joked, like you're the director, the lighting guy, the person in front of the camera, and then the performer, you're playing the drum. You're literally doing like five roles in one thing, at one time. So it is quite a lot to think about.
I think that's what it is when as soon as you start an in-person lesson, the only thing that's there is the moment. Mm-hmm. Like you just pay attention. But when you're teaching to a camera, you are thinking like, am I overexposed? I'm not, all of a sudden, the only thing I'm not thinking about is, am I rushing? Am I dragging? Am I too loud? Am I too quiet? I'm actually only thinking about, am I overexposed? Oh crap, my key light's at 5,800, but I think the light behind me is at 5,600. Oh, I might as well be Jabba the Hutt as far as skin tones. It's just a green gloppy mess. And so there's all that stuff going on while you're staring down the barrel of a lens and trying to make a deep contact with someone you don't know. You don't know who's going to be watching this thing. And that's another thing too, is like, there's no way. Okay, by the way, everybody, welcome into Drum with Mike and Eddie. This is a drumming podcast for creators, but it's really just our therapy session. There's no way that the past 2 million negative comments over your entire career aren't just kind of creeping in. I can always tell someone that thinks about that stuff too much because they cut them off. They cut off the comments before they happen.
Yeah.
Look, I know you guys are going to say blah, 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 but it's like, okay, you're thinking too much about the comment section, man. It's just so keep true. It going.
It's so, so true. I think one of the things that I have started to notice regarding like the differences between online and in person is that online, when I first started my membership back in the day, I underestimated people or people's playing or things, chops, grooves, whatever. I just overlooked the simplicity. I think, how can I explain this? Like it's hard to figure out what things people are finding difficult or what people want through an online space, whether it be Instagram, YouTube, or Zoom, or all these kind of things. Like you shoot a piece of content about, I don't know, a new cool linear groove or whatever it may be. And you turn the camera off and you think, right, everyone's going to be playing this back like that and enjoying it and then uploading to Instagram. When in reality, most people are taking weeks, if not months, over that thing, or have watched it and gone, that's too hard. I'm going to look for something else. You know, like I didn't understand like the true, I don't know. Yeah. What people kind of feel and think about certain things when it came to online videos.
Well, and the other thing is you don't, I think that a lot of people don't spend enough time going back in time experiencing what they went through. So it's like, okay, this thing that took you personally 2 weeks to dial in and then another 6 months to perfect, you just taught it in 5 minutes and said, good luck. Like, mm-hmm.
And have fun.
Okay, but but that's not how it was delivered to you and that's not how you worked on it. So you do have to put in those little moments of saying like, hey guys, make sure you be patient with yourselves. This is going to take some time. And then also like try to throw in a, hey, if you can't take this entire idea and absorb it, that's okay. Try the first note, then the second note, then the first and second note, then the first, second, and third. Like you could do it one note at a time. You have to give them different options of how to learn. Where in an in-person lesson, I wouldn't tell somebody before they even tried it six different ways to do it. I would just see what happens. Mm-hmm. And then I'm like, oh, tell me what your experience. And they're like, can you write it out? I'm like, yeah, sure. And then I notice, oh, wow. Okay, so you're just way better on paper. That's how you learn. Cool. Well, I can't do that with a camera. I have to assume that somebody that only learns by ear is watching, somebody that only learns by notation is watching, somebody that needs to see it from an overhead angle slowly is watching, and yeah. Someone who's also, maybe somebody's watching who English is their second language. And it's like, okay, well, let me slow down a little bit. Chill out. It's all good. No big deal, baby. You know, like you have to, that's, so the online world is you don't know who's watching. In an in-person lesson, it's the person in front of you and you can just kind of figure it out.
I've got a question for you, mate. And it goes back to, I mean, you know, just, I don't know how to word it. It's a difficult question. And it's not really, but I'm just having a brain fart because I'm doing a podcast. But online versus in-person, like how quick were you at sort of finding your feet when it came to in-person teaching, like the teacher you were, how to structure the lessons and how to be confident compared to how long did it take you to find your feet regarding filming through a camera?
Great question. And I would love when I'm done, because I know that I'm a selfish only child, I would love to hear your answer, but I won't ask you for it. So make sure you jump in and say, well, for me, because I do want to hear your perspective on that. In person, you know, we've talked about this a lot in the past, but I was very fortunate that I was given students right off the bat. So I had 60 something students that I inherited from another teacher on my first day. So 2 weeks of teaching, that's 130 lessons in 2 weeks because I was doing 65 a week. So it probably felt quick, but it wasn't. You know, that would be years for somebody that's teaching 10 students a week. So I think it's just observing, you know, in the very beginning, you're more nervous than the student because you're so scared that you're not going to overdeliver. You just want to make it valuable. You want to make it fun. And generally, most teachers, especially in person, do way too much in their first year or two of lessons. It's like, okay, so here's everything I've ever learned in my entire life. I know we only have a half an hour, but here's this book. I'll see you next week. And it's like, you know, in all honesty, you could teach them right, left, and ask them to work on that for a week, and they'd still have five more years to go on that one thing. You and I have been playing our whole lives and we still haven't mastered single strokes. You know, I see Carter McClain play singles and I go, yeah, I'm not there yet. You know?
Yeah.
And that's the pattern is right, then left. That's the whole pattern. It's over. And we still can't do that. You're working on right kick. That's the whole pattern. You're still chipping away at it.
Still,
you know,
going.
What I mean? And then I see Thomas Lang and I go, yeah, I still got work to do. So I think a lot of people give too much, and I definitely gave way too much material, gave too many assignments. So it probably took me about a year or so to find my feet as a teacher. And then I'm still refining it every year. You know, I just had a dinner with Amber where we went out to dinner to just talk about the 2024 camp season. And I was telling her, here's the things that I need to happen this year that haven't happened in the past. This is how it's going to be better. So it's still happening. As far as online, such a different animal. In the beginning, you think you're being yourself, and then you watch it back and you find out that the camera steals about 30 to 40% of your energy, and you being yourself is really boring. And so then you're like, oh, this isn't even fun for anybody to watch. Mm-hmm. So then you kick it up a notch, and that's where you really F things up. Like, what is up, everyone? Mike Johnston here from mikeslessons.com. Facebook cats, YouTubers, that new platform, Instagram. What's up? Get on in here. And it's like, shut up, bro. Like, dude, what are you doing? So then you go too far that way. And then eventually you find your place where you go, okay, this is me on camera. Me on camera probably took 5 to 6 years to even get to a place where I didn't just think it was the worst thing ever.
Yeah. Know? It's interesting, mate.
What about you, man?
I mean, you did it. You did it. There you go, mate. I mean, I was just happy to get the question out of my brain. You saw what happened there. I don't know what went on, but I'm just happy I got it out. But yeah, I'm kind of in the same boat, really. Like, regarding online, it's still taking, even to this day, I turn the camera on and I'm like, okay, I've got to find that line between, if you met me in the street, I would be the same person. But also, like you said, I can't really be the same person because it's boring and you're not going to...
Right.
If I just turned the camera on and went, you're right, guys, so just going to go through a 6-stroke roll thing here. So you would just switch off like you would. But the internet is too busy, and that is just, it's not boring and it's not engaging. So even to this day, I mean, I turned the camera on probably, God, when was it? I mean, 2000, I don't even know. I don't even know. It was a long time ago, a couple of years before we met. So long enough. And I'm still chipping away at it day to day, trying to find that balance between all of those things I mentioned, energy, being the real me, trying to keep people engaged, be knowledgeable in the moment. But then if it gets too deep, sprinkle a bit of humor in there, but then trying to not be perfect as well, but whilst trying to deliver, in my eyes, a perfect video. So, which is just its own thing in, yeah, that is a difficult thing. Trying to convey, like, yeah, we're all the same. This is a relatable thing, but trying to make it cool so people want to play drums. You know what I mean?
Now, the in-person thing, you know, you've always taught a little bit, but now you're teaching a lot. Like, how do you feel with that? Like, do you feel like you know how to walk out of your studio, shake the hand? What, I mean, however you approach the whole thing, from the moment you meet the person to the moment you say, all right, hope to see you next week, get in some practice. Like, have you hit your stride yet?
I think I have, yeah. And to be honest, mate, I don't think it's even necessarily doing more one-to-ones. I think that comes into it. But what's really helped me is things like doing the camps with you, doing clinics, and just doing more things in the drum world and doing like group masterclasses and stuff. And I think it's kind of similar to turning on the camera. You've just got to do more of it to figure out who you are. Understand that you can do it, and don't get in your head too much. But yeah, chucking myself in the deep end in other areas of teaching has made one-to-ones not a walk in the park, because it's not that at all. But teaching 30 drummers that you don't know and they don't know you, and some of them are hobbyists and some of them are wannabe pros and some of them love metal and some of them love jazz, that's far harder than having a one-to-one with someone who's specifically booked in with you because they like your teaching and your playing. So chucking myself in the deep end in drums in general has just, it's had a big positive impact on me as just a drum teacher, really. And now I'm loving it more and more. And it was cool, mate. Yesterday, I don't know if I said, but there was 3 guys who came yesterday, and they've come quite a lot, and they're all really good. One of them, Harry, I know he'll be listening now. He's only been playing for a couple of years. And when he came here, we were like, you know, he won't mind me saying, but he was new to the drums. We couldn't really play along to music or do much of those things. And now, mate, he was banging out and he learned the 6-stroke roll on his own here. He came back yesterday and we're playing along to Spotify, playing 6-stroke rolls, inverted paradiddles, like perfectly in time. And now I'm looking at him, focusing on these cool new rudiments he's playing. And subconsciously, I'm like, hang on a minute. He's playing perfectly in time. This is unbelievable in so many different ways. And I'm at the point with a lot of the people who come here now where we're comfortable with each other and we can push. And I know when to push. And then I know when to say, we're going to really start splitting hairs here and going in. Like, no more kind of like fancy choppy stuff. You can do that on your own. Let's really dial in. So yeah, to answer your question, mate, long story short, online, it's still taking me, I'm still doing it every time I turn the camera on. And in person, I'm still doing it as well. But it's become a lot more natural, far quicker than the camera because of just, yeah, chucking myself in the deep end, really.
Yeah, and I think some people are just okay. Like, I'm not social at all. I'm really not comfortable in social situations unless, this sounds terrible, but unless I'm leading the situation. Like, if I'm doing a clinic, nothing, no problems at all. It's when Meinl says, all right, after the festival today, we're all going to meet at this Thai restaurant for a dinner. I'm like, oh God, oh God, oh God, not the group dinner. And then I don't know who I'm going to sit next to. And then it's always like, yep, the percussion guy that's sponsored by Meinl that I'm like, so how's Spain? And he's like, I don't know. I'm from Germany. And I'm like, that's cool.
Yep, yep.
Okay. But I don't have any of that feeling when it comes to one-on-one. If it's me and one person, I'm fine with it. I have a great time. But one thing that I think is really important is for on camera and for in person. And this is, I'm bringing this up because you've expressed this in voice notes a lot over the past couple of weeks. If you don't want to do it, you have no shot. No shot at being any good at this. Mm-hmm. You have to enjoy it. And you expressing like how much fun you just had in your last, you know, five private, you know, you'll call me right after or send a voice note right after your group of private lessons. You'll be like, man, what a great day. I just feel like I had so much fun and I added so much to what they're trying to learn. And it's like, well, that's it, man. Like if you like doing it, you're going to be good at it. And even if you're not good at it, like I was not good at speaking to a camera, I was not good at teaching private drum lessons, I always liked it. There was never a time in the very, very beginning of YouTube in 2005. And when I first started teaching drum lessons in 90, I was 17. So 1994, there was never a time that I didn't like it. I loved it from the first minute. The first time I ever got to teach a private lesson at Drum Guitar City, I was like, yeah, I think I want to do this for the rest of my life. This is the coolest thing ever.
I think I had a question as well, and I think you've just maybe answered it. It comes down to loving it. But I think a lot of people listening will want to know the answer to this, hence why I'm asking. But when you first started making videos, it's kind of more of a businessy question, but like, in an in-person lesson, you get that instant reward. You see that they're enjoying it and they're loving it and they're going to come back next week and you're laughing, you're high-fiving, or you know, it might be a deep lesson, whatever it may be. You're getting that satisfaction and that reward and also
feedback.
Yeah, feedback. And you're also getting money straight
financial
away.
Financial reward.
Financial reward straight away. Like you're,
they didn't have that in the early days of YouTube.
You were doing a... lesson and then someone's going, there you go, mate, I'll see you next week, just like I do with boxing or a PT or whatever. So when you first started doing video lessons, how did you be consistent when you weren't getting those, the feedback and then also the financial reward? Like what kept you being consistent?
Man, it was, oddly enough, it was the process. Like every single time I did it, I just knew it could have been a little bit better. And so I couldn't wait to try it again tomorrow. And this is, man, there was no, I mean, maybe there was Adobe Premiere and Final Cut, but I was on, God, what was I on? Something like Swift or so. I was on something, you know, Sony Vegas. I don't know what I was on, but I was on something like, or maybe it was just like Windows Movie Maker. Yeah, that my original stuff was Windows Movie Maker. And so it, so there was no like color correction. There was just contrast. Mm-hmm. I think that was the only slider you get.
Yeah.
Contrast and brightness. But I just knew it could be better. And I'd try again tomorrow and I'd try again. And, you know, we were so fortunate those times to not have big audiences. You know, I mean, no one was searching on YouTube. It was just like, they just go to the homepage and whatever they saw. And that was it. They didn't even know what was going on. But for me, it was just trying to make it better. You know, what's funny though, is it took, I would say almost a decade for me to realize anything about the gear. I never thought about the gear in the early days because there it wasn't an option. I didn't have money for the gear. So it's like, well, I can afford this camcorder. It's filming me. I never thought about focus. Like, well, it's autofocus. And it was like an iPhone. The whole thing was in focus. There's no depth of field.
Yeah.
There's no lens. I mean, it's all built into the camcorder. And, it, you know, you'd take out your little videotape And then put that into like something that could turn into a digital format. So yeah, in the beginning, it was just about the process. I just loved doing it and trying to make it better each time. And you know what, dude, so those early YouTube lessons are 2005. We're almost 20 years later and nothing has changed. I just made a bunch of videos. I made 6 videos yesterday, all with 4 angles, all in 4K. And the 6th video was better than the first video because I edited them in sequence.
Yeah.
And I just knew how it could be a little bit better and a little bit. And I shifted the light by 1 degree and I turned it from, 79% to 80% brightness. Mm-hmm. And I still love that shit so much. That's what makes my day is like, can everything I'm doing today be a tiny bit better than it was yesterday? So that's what keeps me going. I did want to mention something though, that I noticed going back to what you were talking about with getting comfortable on camera, doing the thing, because you've been doing more YouTube videos now than you've done in the past decade. I mean, yeah. YouTube is now one of your platforms. Do you think, and this is to help our listeners out there, we have platforms. So TikTok, Instagram, and YouTube would be our main video platforms. Once you've chosen the platform, so now you're doing a lot of YouTube stuff, do you think the format is a big help? Because my idea is you're doing more YouTube videos now because you finally have a format. You know what to do. Like, mm-hmm. Okay, I'm going to sit at the computer. I'm going to break down this thing. They're going to see half of a screen of my computer, half a screen of me. Then I'm going to go to the kit. I'm going to demo it. And then I'm going to talk about it a little bit more. Like, do you think having your own personal format, one, gives you confidence in, okay, cool, this is pretty original. But two, like, well, at least I know what to do.
Yeah, mate, 100%. It's the only reason why I'm doing it now, to be honest. And I mean, even the other day, I voice noted you about how to record like Spotify and a click into a Pro Tools session whilst already record. Like, I'm still trying to figure it out regarding all that stuff. But yeah, having a format, mate, is just, and coming up with a way in which you like creating content and it marries perfectly with what you would like to watch. I think that is it. You know, it's just like, it took me so long to figure out what do I want to do on YouTube? Like, I don't want to necessarily do covers all the time. I want to talk to the camera. I want to get to know people. I want to get them to know me. And I don't want to chase that perfect take. I just don't want to do it. And that's why I turned it into my first 5 minutes. But yeah, having a format is everything. And I think, yeah, for those who are listening who want to do more on YouTube or Instagram, finding that format that works for you, like I said, that it's balancing those two things of output versus input. You know, we always talk about this on the podcast, and I put up a video yesterday and it's going to hit 1,000 views hopefully today. And I'm like, sweet. It took me more time to really shoot it than it did to edit it. It looks good. I'm happy with it. It's good enough. I'm proud of it. I know I can get better, but I'll get better the more I do. Bang it out. Right. I'm itching to do the next one. It's kind of how you feel.
You and I talked about for probably 3 to 4 years of our friendship. I'd say you've sent me over 100 voice notes saying these words, mate, I just got to do more YouTube this year. I just got to do a lot more YouTube. And it's like, okay, well, you got to start. But it's like, you can't start until you figure out your thing. Like, why are you here? There's so many people on this platform. What makes you any different other than being you? But like, the reality is, you being you is enough. We as the creators don't feel like it is. We feel like we have to bring something new to the table. But the place that I see people making a big mistake is when they keep changing the format. Who's the guy that you follow? The guy that just does like tutorials on how to make videos and stuff.
Adrian Pear or Per.
Okay, so Adrian Pear. Great example of a guy that's made 900 of the exact same video, but it's never the same video.
Yeah.
But it's the same exact format. It'll be a wide shot with yellow text. Mm-hmm. He'll say something. The crazy thing is there's no difference between his tutorials and him showing off a new Filipino restaurant with his girlfriend. It's the same format. He knows what he does. He does it really well. And it's just like, Filipino? Filipian? Filipian.
I'm not sure.
I don't know. I'll have to cut that whole thing out. Hope I didn't offend anybody.
That was the devil coming in.
Ooh, yeah, yeah.
What did you say?
My bad wolf was like, did you just get canceled? I don't know. All respect, but he's showing off restaurants from his culture, and it's the same format. It's the exact same format. So I think having a format is so helpful. You know, I mean, it's not like when I found blocks, it wasn't the blocks that were the thing. It was the format of the blocks. I sit on the couch. I tell you what it is. I play the block. Then I write it on a pad. Then I play the block again. And then I show off how cool the block can be. That format is repeatable. And then it's like, cool. Next 20 videos are done. I don't even have to think about this.
Exactly. Mate. Exactly.
It's our job to not get sick of it.
Mate, exactly. That's it. And I think, yeah, it's balancing those things, mate. Like we said, there's so many things to balance with making content, whether it's output versus input, the time it takes versus what you're getting back, like how much you enjoy it versus how much the viewers enjoy it. There's so many things. For me, mate, I think finding the format, you've got to be selfish with that format. You've got to like just want to make it over and over and over again. But I've made, yeah, more videos on YouTube than I have done in my entire life over the last 5-6 weeks because I've done a video
totally
a week. Like,
oh, okay, real quick. Mm-hmm. Do you think it's, I'm just curious because we've both done this. To me, blocks wouldn't be blocks without naming it blocks. And your videos are, you now have fly on the wall and you have my first 5 minutes. Do you think naming the format is important to the branding?
Yeah, mate, massively.
Right? It's the secret sauce.
Mate, it is the secret sauce. I'm actually I'm still getting that design made for fly on the wall. Yeah. Is, mate. It's that. It's like, just, you know, whether you're in the shower or driving and you're thinking, what can I do here? Like, how can I not necessarily reinvent the wheel, but come up with, yeah, a format that works. And then you think of a name and then you go, boom, yes, got it. Like the practice project.
And it doesn't...
Come
on!
That whole thing is like, we were looking for this thing where we could get people more involved. And speaking about that, we'll talk about the pictures in the Patreon chat in a sec. But we were thinking of like, how can we package this thing together, all of our ideas and practice more and... And then, yeah, the practice project, there we go. And it's
boom.
The format and the name, boom.
It helps us personally. Like you and I are helped by the fact that we don't say, hey, make sure you jump in the Patreon and do some jamming. Like you and I say to each other, hey, I'm going to make a practice project post today. So I'll do this one. Why don't you do one in 2 days? Real quick, would you care to listen to somebody talk about their experience in the practice project?
Mate, bring it on.
Mike and Eddie, I hope you guys are having an awesome day. I just want to say the practice project has been fantastic. I love it. For me, it's not really that it's getting me to practice because honestly, my tide has been in for about 3 months now. But that's also your guys' fault because that happened when I started listening to the podcast 3 months ago. Because at the time, I was struggling to prioritize things and really get myself to practice regularly. And it really only took, I don't know, 3 or 4 episodes into the podcast before I was like, all right, that's it. I'm practicing every single day from now on. And I have somehow managed to keep that up. But I'm also really just loving the hell out of it. I am learning so much. I'm seeing so many improvements in my playing and finding out all kinds of things that I want to work on. So that's still going right now. I am highly motivated, but in addition, getting into the practice project now, that just means that I can share all that stuff and see what other people are working on. And it's just, it's great. I mean, dare I say, it's fucking awesome. I love it. I said it, I'm sorry, but it's just so great. And really, I'm just so happy to be part of this whole family thing that you guys have going between the Patreon and the podcast and Mike's lessons. It's just what I needed in my life to really get me going. And it's really helping out a lot. So I really appreciate everything that you guys are putting out there. And I can't wait to see what else you want to do with Practice Project and what we can all do with it. So that is super exciting. Anyway, hope you guys have an awesome day. I'll see you in the practice project and literally everywhere else. Bye, guys.
What a legend.
Well, all right.
What a legend. I mean,
that was Greg Wargast, by the way.
You're a legend. For listeners who aren't signed up, mate, if that doesn't make you want to sign up, you know what I mean? That's all the advertising we need to do now, mate. We don't need to be those cheesy salesmen anymore. But I will say, patrons. So in the chat, if you have the Patreon app, there is a little chat button. And feel free, and we would love to see it. Please put in pictures of you on the kit, your practice setup, whether it be a pad, well, whatever, electric kit, what you're working on, whatever it may be. That chat is for you and us to geek out and talk to each other in real time. And yeah, so use that chat, send pictures in, and we'll speak about some kits and picks in the next episode.
Well, real quick. You ready for another one?
Oh, let's do it. Let's do it.
I mean, I know you wrapped it up beautifully, but Jim Hendigas, I mean, he's friend of the podcast. I haven't heard either. I hadn't heard Greg's voice note yet, and I want to hear what Jim has to say about the practice project.
Okay.
Mike and Eddie, practice project. I love it. I love it because I go online or I go to concerts and I see drummers who are awesome, and then I go to practice and I'm not awesome. And I don't often see that sort of the work that people put into things. And so to get down to the work and to see the work and to see Mike and Eddie go, ugh, ugh, when they're practicing, that's really encouraging to me. So right now, I'm working on a bio, did I say that right? And since I grew up playing Stone Temple Pilots and Nirvana, this is a little bit of outside my wheelhouse. So I've been working on that about a half an hour a day and getting about 20 minutes of pad work in. So if I can get about an hour of practice every day, I might just make Mike and Eddie proud and be useful to other musicians.
That is awesome. Very cool.
If you're doing an hour a day, yeah, I'm proud, mate. I'm unimpressed as well. Fair play.
Yeah. Yeah, you're doing a lot better than us.
Yep.
Well, I got to say, for anybody that's not a part of it yet, the link is in the description as well as the camp coming up this week. Just go over to our Patreon page, sign up for the practice project. And really, it's just a way to hold each other accountable. But Eddie and I are posting videos of what we're working on. But to be honest, like what we're working on, that's not the value. Maybe like Jim said, seeing us fail, because we are showing you our real practice with our phones. It's not edited. There's no crispy audio. But the real benefit is when everyone starts writing what they practiced that day. And honestly, maybe some of the biggest benefit is when they write, sorry, I couldn't practice today. Life got in the way.
Yeah.
It kind of makes everybody feel like, okay, so I'm not the only one. Because you shouldn't feel guilty about not practicing every day. We all have busy lives. Eddie and I are full-time drummers and we find it hard to practice sometimes.
Oh, mate. I'm even thinking about, well, I've got a full drum day tomorrow. Well, every day is a drum day now in the minute, but I've got a full day tomorrow and I'm like already thinking, okay, I have to factor in, you know, practice and then the practice project. So yeah, it's truly a game changer. And like you said, mate, I'm excited to see where it goes and what happens with it over time and in the future and whatnot, man. But yeah, banging.
That was a fun episode. I hope you guys got a lot out of that. I hope you understand that just because you can teach doesn't mean that you can teach on every format without practice. You might be one of the greatest in-person teachers in the world. That won't just translate to a camera without practice. You might be able to do the camera thing and the in-person thing. That doesn't mean you can write a book without practice. So whatever you want to be great at, I say go for it. But just know that you're going to have to put in the hours. You're going to have to put in the reps. You're going to have to do the work.
Yeah, man.
That being said, for now, episode 156, online versus in-person teaching, is in the can.
Boom. We'll see you in the virtual camp in a couple days, people. Lock in, tune in. Link in the description, yeah? See you later.
Who are you? What do you do this for a living?